Welcome to Outside the Lines, the podcast of our host, Bob Cheviar. Bob is a longtime teaching pro in Westchester County, New York, and a former top 15 ranked player in the United States in the men's 35 and 40 and over singles and doubles in the late 1980s and early 90s. He is also the author of the pathbreaking book, Deconstructing Tennis, The 4D System. The book lays out a simple and complete framework for how to use the time between points in tennis. Bob's co-host on Outside the Lines is Scott Shannon, also a teaching pro in Westchester, whose best ranking in men's open singles was number two in the East in 1980. He was also ranked number one in the East that year in doubles with Peter Bromley. Scott was also a top 10 player in the U.S. in 35 and over singles and doubles. Your hosts hope to help you get your mental approach more on target.
Welcome to Outside the Lines. I'm Bob Cheviar, your host, and I'm here with my co-host, Scott Shannon. And today we're going to talk about what are the takeaways when you lose a match. Now, one framework which we developed a bit in several of our podcasts that in order to be successful in tennis, you have to want to win, but you also have to hate to lose. And I think one way to immediately begin the discussion of losing a match is to talk about people that are so emotionally upset by the defeat that they can't really have any takeaways from, let's say, what they could have done better, what tactic could they have used instead of the one which they did use, were they nervous? Helping to figure out all these things after a loss, particularly players pay much better attention to themselves and their coach after a loss because they really would like to avoid that experience happening again. So I was speaking a little bit earlier with Scott, and Scott, why don't you please share with us when you were a young tennis player and you went out on the tour to Europe, what was your experience there of winning and losing?
Thanks, Bob, and hi, everybody. When I went on the tour, it was becoming international as opposed to just playing in USTA Eastern. And it was a whole higher level of seriousness because this was the big circuit and we were playing the qualifying rounds because our rankings were not high enough to get into the main draw, but we were able to actually get into the qualifying rounds. And although we were looking forward to touring Europe and seeing Europe, because neither my doubles partner, Tom Carey, nor I had been to Europe and we wanted to see what was happening there and all those great cities, we definitely wanted to experience the tennis circuit at its highest level. And boy, did we. What I found was that I really did not know what I was doing in so many ways compared to the other players that were there, especially the main draw players. And so I set about figuring out what it is that they know, what it is that they do in training and practice, and then in matches that allowed them to be competitive and more successful, and thus just getting so much more out of the game of tennis and having fun. In 6 weeks of being over there, I won exactly one match. But the amount of information and the takeaways that I came away with were fantastically helpful for me. And it happened right away when I returned to New York. My ranking had been 19 the year before. My ranking went up to 5. And although that doesn't sound like a huge jump, it wasn't a major jump in the rankings because the USTA Eastern Men's Open was very, very strong.
Extremely strong.
World-class players, former world-class players, and it was very competitive. I saw these things that I took away from Europe and put them to use. I saw them come into my matches and give me tremendously more positive results within 6 to 8 months.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, I think the counterexample to someone who pretty much just said, I'm going to study the game and learn patterns of play, shot selection at different moments in a match, that type of thing. People that get too much involved in the actual result, I think they use an expression on the Tennis Channel, scar tissue. And that's particularly the case when a player is about to win and then doesn't execute and ends up losing the match. And the question then is this scar tissue going to interfere with their current and future performance? Are they going to take the bad things about this loss along with them, or are they going to be able to learn from it and move on and do something positive with the experience, even though it was very disappointing to lose that particular match? My experience is players will accept suggestions about how to play different tactics at different points in the match in order to improve themselves. But the toughest one that they have to deal with, and they aren't always willing to accept, is I was nervous and I couldn't execute because of my nerves. I need help handling the pressure situations because I don't produce my best tennis at those moments. Would you say something having to do with nerves was a part of your improvement that you got out of the European circuit?
Absolutely, Bob. And what you are touching on here is I was nervous and then I choked. Because nervousness creates that tension and that interference, and it prevents you from doing the things that your body actually knows how to do. At least it prevents it from doing it at a level that would be competitive in the moment. And yes, my nerves in Europe were definitely present, and my partners and many of the other guys that were on that circuit for the first time, you could see the nerves. And then you could see the guys that had been on the international circuit since they were juniors, they didn't have the same level of nerves until they were playing players that were seated much higher above them. And then they got the nerves. But generally, the guys that had been experienced on the circuit knew how to calm their nerves and focus despite having some nervousness. The thing that you must understand is that being nervous is just part of being human. Learning how to manage those nerves and work through them and reduce them is a very important tool. Some of it had to do with the fact that we went on this circuit and then experienced it and worked with it and came back to the States and said, you know, I've been out there on this big circuit with all these big, highly ranked players. You know what? They all put their shorts on the same way I do in the morning. You got to go out there and play good tennis and test people and not beat yourself. So, you know, it's something that you can control, the level of nervousness and thus the level of interference that you get on the tennis court during your matches. But you have to think about it and you have to go and test yourself against much better players and go through that experience and then come out the other side and say, gee, what did I learn from this? You know, can I be more relaxed now because I have more information and I know that it's not so scary out there. And yes, I'm going to lose matches, but how do I now play where I'm competitive against the players who I should be? And I tell you, it was like the best 6 weeks of my tennis career.
Mm. So I think this is, here's why I think this is interesting on a whole other level, because we all, tennis players, know that when you're winning and you're successful, your self-trust and your belief in yourself is going to go up with that success. So on the flip side, when you're going out there and you're losing a lot, isn't it really difficult to get that self-belief? I mean, you managed to do it, but I remember one player who was an Eastern player, he was right around our level, but he generally refused to play any Eastern tournaments because he considered himself too good. And he went out and played the Futures Tour, where he rarely, if ever, won a match. And then when he did come back and play a local event, and he would be extremely shocked that he wasn't winning the entire thing, but he didn't really know how to win because he was spending the most of his time in the competitive environment losing. So how do you juxtapose those two ideas, Scott? How would you say you were able to take that losing experience and translate it into a winning experience? This particular player, in fact, was not.
A lot of it has to do with who you are and how you approach your life, not just how you approach your tennis, because they go hand in hand. And my choice coming back from Europe was not to be embarrassed or to try to spin what had happened there and make excuses because I was the loser. I told people point blank that this was like the most eye-opening experience for me as a tennis player, because I really went to the heart of the issue in terms of, I want to know what it's like to be on the circuit and to play tennis at a level that these circuit players were playing, and what work did I need to do it? So I had a healthy, positive attitude as a 26-year-old and with a lot of tennis in front of me, and I wanted to improve, and I was not getting stuck on whether I was winning matches or losing matches. I started to focus on how do I play my matches better and more efficient with fewer errors, more tactics, better concentration, being relaxed, having fun, etc. So I think that it has to do with how do you approach learning and improving in anything.
Yeah, so this balance, I agree with you completely. You need the right takeaways when you are getting beaten so that you can translate your losses into victories going down the road. Just a couple of interesting stats. On the ATP men's tour, the players ranked between 58 and 100, every one of them has a losing record on the main pro tour. Now, this doesn't mean that some of them aren't occasionally taking a step back and going to the satellite level and trying to get some wins under their belt, because I think they all do understand that winning is sort of a habit, and you need to build up what it's like when you're in winning position to have confidence that you know what to do. So I'm not sure of their record, including satellite, but each of these players ranked below number 58, it's pretty tough on them because they're not really building up that winning mood type of momentum that you would need to be really, really successful. Now, The ITF, when they talk about juniors developing and wanting to improve, says the ideal mix is pretty much 7 wins and 3 losses for any 10 matches. That means you're winning much more of the time, but you're also going out there and going up against players of a higher caliber that you have to deal with and learn against someone who's a little bit better than you are. So I think that's an excellent ratio for our players, Scott, in Westchester, who are looking to improve their game. If it's too easy, for example, let's say you finish your season last year and your record was 30 wins and 2 losses, you need to, if you're also out to improve, if you're happy just winning 30 and losing 2, that's fine. But if you're out to improve, you have to be tested quite a bit more on the other side of it so that you start to see what's going to take you to the next level.
Hey, Bob, let me interject a thought I had from that European circuit that I played back in 1977.
Sure.
The ATP has a representative at every tournament, and he is looking out for the players. Even if you're not actually a member of the ATP, which I wasn't, but I was a player there. So even though he didn't want to give us that much attention, he said to us at one point, "Why are you guys here?" and we're like, "What are you talking about? Why are we here? This is great. You know, we're in Europe. We're playing tennis. I'm meeting Stan Smith, former number one." Well, he was, might have been currently, or just former number one player in the world. This was 77. And I'm playing against former Wimbledon champions, Jan Kodis, a number six in the world in singles, Raul Ramirez from Mexico. And we got into the doubles in Spain and were able to play against them. Why wouldn't we want to be here if they would let us in? And he said, "You guys should be down there on the satellite challenger circuit and, you know, getting experience and getting all these matches and getting much more, time in the trenches." And we're like, we're teaching tennis for a living. We can't pay expenses for year round and all this stuff. This is sort of a shot in the dark. And I never talked with him again after that circuit, but if I did, I would be able to tell him that was the best 6 weeks in terms of improving my game, that getting me in the challenge trenches and everything, I don't think would have at all given me. And it's just one of those things where he was looking at it so traditionally about you have to work your way up and work your way through. And we said, you know what? We're going to go where we can go. And I just feel very fortunate that I think I took a maximum amount of benefit and information and emotional security and maturity out of that 6 weeks on the tour. Plus, it's great to be able to tell people that I went and did this for 6 weeks in Europe.
For sure. Now, we were speaking again a little bit before we went live here, and you made a really excellent point that the title of what we're talking about is something like, what are the takeaways from losing a match? But you made the point there should be a takeaway when you win a match, because every single match is providing a player with valuable information about what they did both right and wrong. So we shouldn't be ignoring. Many times people pay more attention, right, when they've lost because of the pain of the emotional pain of going through a defeat. But winning, we want to be paying really good attention to when we're winning and when we're doing something right, because that's going to allow us to repeat it in the future.
Absolutely. One of the things that you need to pay attention to when you're winning, and this is if you know what happened, which is one of my questions for when you lose or you win. Do you know what happened? Bob, you and I have talked about this very often. We'll ask our students when we haven't been able to see the match, so what happened? And then they say the score and they say, no, what happened? Like, how did the match go? Did you return serve well? Did you first serve go in with high percentage? You know, were you relaxed? Did you have fun? You know, how did you match up against this player's strokes? Blah, blah, blah. But when you are winning, you should pay attention to how you feel, because you want that feeling that you get when you're winning and you're relaxed, because you're not getting the negative, you're getting the positive feedback. You're feeling relaxed, you're going to focus. You need to take that feeling and be able to replicate it in all of your future matches, winning or losing, to get yourself to function at the level that you deserve to play at.
Absolutely correct. You have to really be in touch with that feeling, that winning feeling, that feeling in your body. So I would also, when I look back at wins and losses throughout my career, I can make a couple of sweeping generalizations that held true. And one is that I could play a consistent counterpunching style and be quite effective because I moved well and I was very consistent. However, I never beat a player who on paper was better than me by playing that game. I had to find a way to impress myself against those better players, to force them into some errors because I was dictating the play. And that, to me, still influences the way I teach tennis. I believe if you're going to go out there and give yourself a chance against someone who's really strong, you must develop offensive capabilities that you can use to attack them.
That reminds me of a time, Bob, in my early 20s before going to Europe, when I was losing some very close matches to some very, very solid and highly ranked players in the East. But I could play with them. I was in the match. I could win those matches, but I was losing those matches consistently. And I had to think about what was happening in the match at a particular time that turned it around and put me at a disadvantage, and then I lose the match. And it took a little while, but I eventually pinpointed it that there were a few points here and there as the set would progress into the seventh, eighth, and ninth game, where I would falter a little bit because my focus would change and I got distracted by the closeness of the score, and I would make a few bad decisions or make some unforced errors that helped my opponent, and it would turn around what was a very well played set up till then, and I almost was handing them the set, and then at times it was handing them the match.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to get real serious about what was it I needed to change to become a player that could translate these good matches I was playing into wins. Obviously not every one, but to start getting a majority of the wins under my belt, because I was in a position to win the match. I deserved to win the match. And I was not sabotaging myself anymore on a consistent basis. And that just had my game exploding in terms of my results.
So I think if we could summarize what we've been saying, we started by saying you want to win, but you also need to hate to lose. But if hating to lose is too overwhelming. A couple of things happen. You play too tentatively in your matches because you don't want to make unforced errors. And also, when you hate to lose that much, you're many times not seeing what's going on the court so that you can't grow from it. And I think both you and I would say it's really important for our students when they're in matches to come and talk with their pro, win or lose, so that their takeaways will keep nudging them forward up the ladder of more ability, because they're learning. If they're not learning from each match, one takeaway is enough many times. They're not going to be able to make nearly the progress that they could, because once you've made a certain type of error and you can be in touch with it, many times a player is then going to be saying, there's no way I'm doing this again. I'm going to stick to plan X instead, and I'm going to win this match because I learned from that other match. So important to talk about your matches in general and make sense out of them.
So I have a question for you, Bob. When your student comes off the court having won or lost a match, do you feel that they have an idea of what happened in the match during certain kinds of scores, certain kinds of points? How often did you get deduce? How often did you have game point or break point? And what happened in those points? This is where you can pinpoint behavior that either allows you to grab some of those games and chalk them up on your side and then win sets. But if you don't really know what happened when you played the deuce points and then played the game points, you cannot really tell what it is you have to change to get that whole scoring thing more on your side. Because I'll tell you, and I think you probably agree with me, Bob, but tell me if you're not, it's usually what we do in those times versus what the opponent does. It's very often under our control, the things that happen that make us falter. We'll hit a return in the net right away, like at deuce, or you finally get to break point and you throw up a ball that's, you know, medium high to the forehand volley and bang, the point is over. So how you function in those times, you have to know as a player what goes on for me when I get to those very significant moments in the match. If I want to win these matches, I need to pull my game together so much more when I get to those points in the games and in the sets.
Well, they actually did a study, one of these guys who studied Wimbledon, and it exactly supports your point. They found that in the crucial moments, the top players didn't play any better than they had played during the rest of the match, but the weaker players played worse at those moments. So it's many times you think of rising to the occasion and really responding with great shots. Many times it simply means steady as she goes and let the other player beat themselves, because remember, they have nerve issues and decision making and other things to deal with as well. And if you play a really solid game, they have to do even better than that. And many times our opponents can't quite fit the task there when they're being challenged in that way. So, Scott, I think our takeaways here are there's a lot to learn from every single match, and maybe a little bit more when you lose a match. And actually, losing a couple of matches when you're up against a really good opponent is good for your development. I mean, think of a stock trader who picks 7 out of 10 stocks correctly. We'd all love him to be running our retirement funds because we're going to come out way ahead in the end. If he's investing to win all 10 correctly, he's going to be way too conservative and scared to buy anything with even a little bit of risk in it. And he's not going to make us nearly the same return. Sometimes a wrong choice, we learn from it, we move on, and that leads to further success down the road. Scott, thank you for joining me today on this.
Thanks, Bob.
Talk about losing a match. What are the takeaways? And we hope that all of our listeners can see the positive side, what you can get out of any match, but in particular, losing a match. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Bob.